Sim. Good.
Think so.
Good. Okay, just welcome back everyone. Those who are with us live, those who are still with us on the Zoom, welcome everyone. Continue our Limud. So we left off last week, we were talking about the halachas of Zimun. So we really have one bunch of last nekudas concerning Zimun I want to focus on. That is, who exactly is Mitztari for Zimun? So there are two controversial issues. They're both halachically controversial. One that became politically controversial for some reason, but each one is independently important in terms of halacha. So the controversial one, of course, is Nashim. What exactly is the status of women vis-a-vis Zimun? So the Gemara tells us that men and women are not mistarif together to Zimun, but there is a possibility of Nashim is amnesli atzmon. There's a possibility of women performing Zimun, reciting Zimun on their own. What exactly is the status? So the Gemara speaks about Nashim is amnesli atzmon. What exactly does that mean? So this was a big machoikis of Rishayim. So the Samishayim will learn that when we speak about Nashim Chayavos B'Zimun, it's a wash, because our view is Nashim Chayavos B'Zimun. So the Sabi Shem will take it literally, that Nashim Chayavos, the Tacha, are required to do Zimun. The only reason why you can't have a Tzirah between men and women is because of technical reasons, priestess reasons, other Tzmias reasons. But in terms of purely halach purposes, so it should be perfectly okay for women not only could it be okay, but it's required that women should have to bench on their own together as Zimun. That's one view of Rishon. Another Rishon might know that when the Gemara speaks about women benching as Zimun, it doesn't mean it's a Lashon Chiya, it doesn't mean they have to, it just means they're allowed. Women want to volunteer to do Zimun, then they're permitted to do so. Then there's a third possibility that some say that when Chazal speak about Lashon Chayavos B'Zimun, what that means is, if there's a pre-existing Zimun by men, then the women become Chayavos in Zimun. Then they're obligated to wait, they're obligated to answer, obligated to bench together with the men. But if there is no pre-existing Zimun, then there is no requirement for women to bench with Zimun. So yeah, there are three different possibilities in Rishayim. What is the significance of that phrase that women are, quote unquote, obligating Zimun? Is it a real chiyuv for Atzmon? Is it only between us and Shus, who's never chiyuv ultimate? Or is it a chiyuv that's only been a piggyback on behalf of the men? So the minhag ha'olam is we assume that women are not obligated in Zimun. Back in the days of Rishon, it was not such a loaded topic, just a simple machlekes in Rishon, like any other machlekes. And somehow in our generation, so it's become a very, very loaded topic. So again, the fiyani is daiti, that the women should continue the practice that has been the practice for as far back as we can remember, that generally women do not bench for Zimun. But unfortunately, sometimes you have something in halacha that may itself not be so loaded, may itself not be so controversial, but once it takes on an agenda, so then we have to look at it through a different set of eyes. So it's like the Gemara said in the beginning of Sechaz Yuma that the Tzedukim came up with some unique sheet, Hilchas Paraduma, that was wrong. So the Chachamim went out of their way and held it in the Liban. That they instituted a whole bunch of dinim to show that we can't follow the Tzedukim. But the truth is, if we would have followed the Tzedukim, it wouldn't have been so bad. But the Tzedukim was saying it was a chumra, it wasn't a kud, it was a chumra. That there was a machlekes between the Tzedukim and the Pushim, between the Epikarsim and the Chachamim, whether Paradum can be done with a Tzul Yoim or not. So the Tzedukim were the Machmirim. But Abba Michael, it doesn't matter, since they were doing the Petaris agenda, they were doing the Petaris Tzibra and the Torah, so then that's something that we have to, we cannot tolerate. Now, I am not in any shape or form comparing the two. Please do not misquote me on this one. I'm not saying that there are, people who are your Shemayim, and they really want to fulfill the Shita of Nashim, Chayavos, and Zimun, so I am in no shape or form comparing them to the Tzukim of old. I'm just saying that unfortunately there are many other people who have picked up on Zimun as almost like a banner of declaration of certain attitudes about Torah mitzvahs and women's role in Torah mitzvahs. So tragically, this Machlokes of Rishonim have become a battleground. So once it's become a battleground, once it's become a call to arms, so then I think that we have to take the approach to the other extreme and say that we should not be encouraging women to be mezamos b'zman hazeh. We have other examples of this that are also potentially machliksim and controversial issues in halacha, and if we live in a vacuum, so then there wouldn't be so controversial. But we don't live in a vacuum. The one say halachic agenda is hijacked by certain attitudes and certain approaches, so then we have to take a step back. So therefore, I think Maisa today, we should not at all be encouraging the women to make the zimun. They should look to grandmothers then, the mothers then, and the women who learn to their daughters, and they should answer to the zimun of the men. There is another issue that's less politically charged, and that's the issue of ketanim. What role do ketanim have in terms of zimun? So this is a machlekes, the machlekes lechab and ramah. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes that technically speaking, once the child is a gil b'chinuch, then he can already mitzvah for zimun. The ramah writes that that's not our practice. We're not even until he actually turns by mitzvah, he doesn't participate in the zimun. I one time used the tzach of the Shulchan Aruch as a snuf l'hokol of following shayla. My oldest son turned by mitzvah, so his bo bayom was on a Sunday, on a Shabbat Sunday. So what happened to be that Shabbos, we were at my one of my wife's aunt's house, was a Sfaradi, and we were eating Shabbos Shunis with them, and it was very getting dark, and as we were out getting ready to bench, so it was, he was technically ready bo bayom. It was already Tzitz Kechom, Shabbos had technically ended, it was already Sunday. So now the question was, it was three of us, myself and my uncle and the oldest son. So the question is, can we venture Zimun or not? So the folks have a whole discussion about what's the din of a person eats when they're a Kotan, and now they become a Gomel, the Chayv, it's a Chesinu Shabbos. They Chayv to bench for an Achil that you wake with Katnusa. So it's a similar kind of a Shabbos, because you start for Zimun, right now you're a Gomel, but when you are... you're already a cousin. So I thought, well, snake. So maybe, number one, you can start with Zimun, even though the Achila was because of himself. And then the Yankee Shlomo, we're in the house of Asfardi. So Yesh to Spachel Shulchan Aruch, we had a Gil Achinuch. So that's snake smaker. But yesterday, you're not a piece of challah. Don't eat another piece of challah after dark. And then should I know if you should.
Very question, can you say
or say
if you can start with Zimun?
Steer me every day. You can still say that it would say, it's no worse than. It's no worse than anyone else, than a cotton who's a Gil Achinuch who ventures. And it's all say Ritzay. You might not even be mighty me in Ritzay, because the feast, she does it. It's really too hard. It's like the Chinuch is a suffix. When there's a bit of the Sefer Shabbos for a cotton, and the Shaila, is it a Sefer Shabbos? Because he wasn't Chayim Shabbos itself in a Torah, he became Chayim in the Sefer Shabbos. It's also Shabbat Havdalah, it's also a suffix. So I don't let myself make Havdalah that. I said, you have to get my Havdalah. I don't think you can make it to Havdalah. Anyway, let's move on now to our next major topic, and that is Birchas Hanen. And Birchas Hanen is going to take us now for quite some time. And we're going to begin with, we say when we started Birchas Hanen, we're talking about Lechem, so we're going to begin with the Birchas Hanen of the Bracha B'Amotzi. So when you speak about Amotzi revolves around one basic halachic concept, which is relevant in many areas of halacha, and that's the notion of Lechem. Amotzi Lechem in Aretz. Well, let's say for Birchas Hanen derais, we pointed out, according to many, many opinions, only Chem Birchas Hanen derais on Lechem, the Torah says, Eretz Shalom, we still talk about Lechem. So we have to define properly what halachic Lechem means. So the good news for us is that we don't even have to begin with brachos, because there are other areas of halacha that also talk about Lechem. Let's say the Moshe, there's a din of lechem when it comes to Chashish Chal, there's a din of lechem when it comes to Chiluz Matzah, it's the lechem ayini. So lechem is already an important principle that governs many, many different areas of halacha. So what exactly goes into defining lechem properly? So the Mishnah tells us in Maseches Menachos, that the term lechem, first of all, always conjures up a food that was prepared from the chameshas b'gedolim. It has to come from the five different species of grains. One of those three species of grains, the Mishnah rattled them all, chitim, sairim, kuspin, shul, shifal. We'll see in a moment, hopefully, what those things are, or we'll see what those things are. Where did this thing come from? How do you know what exactly is called lechem? How do you know maybe if I make rice cake, rice bread, maybe that's lechem, maybe if I make... potato starch bread, maybe that's considered to be bread. How do you know what's called lechem? So the Gemara in the Sechem Menachos tells us it's all based on the pasuk concerning chametz and matzah. The Torah says l'sochel l'bchamish shemizyom tochel of matzah. It's lechem oini. That the Torah compares lechem. The Torah compares chametz to matzah. Only something that can become chametz if it's baked quick enough will become matzah. So how do you know what becomes chametz? So chametz is a scientific statement. Chametz is a chit process, is a leavening process. So if you go to the lab and you have to test which grains combined with water will reach that halachic, the physical scientific process called chimutz. So Chazal described that wheat does and barley does and the other grains do. It was a machlekes aterayim between the Yechim and Nuri and the Rabbanan, whether Eiris does or not. When you take rice flour and you mix it together with water, will that turn it into leavening process? Will that turn into what's halachically called lechem? So Yechim and Nuri thought that Eiris is also specifically being done good. And the Chacham disagreed. There is a machlekes rashi and taisi brachas, what Eiris means even. We always translate Eiris to mean rice. It sounds like Eiris, rice. But not everyone agrees that. Rashi quotes another shot with Eiris means. Alatisis rice, that it means what we call rice. There's a story about the Rav, you know, I don't know whether it's a tachlis story or a true story. So about the Rav that apparently he was walking in the street of Washington Heights and he saw one of the bodegas. He was advertising that they're selling arroza, and he saw that it was rice, so he says, Araya for Tosus, that arroza is orris, that's Araya that. Very big story. So we pass it against the Yechim and Nuri. We pass it that Oyris cannot become Chavetz. The fact that Ashkenazim don't need it on Pesach, that's for different reasons. Kitni is Paisach, or the Osman Hagim. But Mikra didn't know that it can't really become Chavetz, even if it's been water for a long time. So the Gemara says that in order to become chametz, it has to be one of these specific five species of grains, and therefore it's only these five species of grains that can be yeti matzah, because shibas yom tochel of matzos is compared to the yisol asechel of chametz, and shibolich al chametz is yeti yeti matzah. So you can only be yeti matzah with something which is born in the chametz. Once we've ascertained that matzah is only acceptable with the five chametz b'nei daman, so now we have a right to compare that to other areas of halacha as well. So let's say, for example, there are other areas where the Torah speaks about lechem. We have farshas challah, we have a chochem lechem aretz. If you make a dough made out of potato starch, you don't have to be chametz. Make a dough made out of rice flour, according to Yom Nuri, according to us, you wouldn't be chayav in our farshas challah. Because again, everything started with chametz. Chametz taught us the matzah, and then there is shabbat lechem spreads out to other areas. Let's say, for example, the Mishnah says menachas that the dinim of chodosh don't apply to anything except for the five grains. Because the same story, the Torah says, "Malachim akalim echarim l'seichon." That's in the Mizeh. The use of chadash also the Torah uses the word lechem. Now the truth is that chadash doesn't only apply to lechem. Chadash applies to cereal also, applies to pasta also. But since the Torah does use lechem as an example of something that the use of chadash should be noyeg on, so that's also included in the Gzeri Shava, all derived all the way back from chametz. The bottom line is this special halach of chametz in the Nagan is the basis of the definition of lechem and kol terkula. So it's true for chametz, and it's true for matzah, and it's true for chadash, for challah, and it's true for brachas as well. And for birchas hamazon, since the birchas hamazon only on lechem, as we spoke with you, the rice of the rabbanon, but you only bench the full brachas, only in something that's halachically called lechem. So therefore, if you make any other bread or any other kind of ingredients, you would not have to bench on that. And similarly, the Chazal instituted dirim derabbanan also on lechem. So called the tikkun rabbanan came there. I said tikkun. So they instituted a mitzvah derabbanan reciting bracha b'maitzi. So in order to recite a maitzi, that's the maitzi lechem in aret. So it's not called lechem. You can't make a maitzi. And then mitzvah derabbanan they instituted the tilas yadayim. And for whatever reason, they only instituted the mitzvah tilas yadayim on halachic bread. So the same story. If you have a rice bread, you have potato starch bread, you have quinoa bread, you would not recite, you would not have to wash the tilas yadayim. So again, this is all an extension. These are all, these dirim derabbanan are all patterned here to the basic dirim deraisa. The lechem depends on these five species. What exactly are these grains that Chazal is speaking of, the Mishnah is speaking about? So two out of the five, we know very, very clearly what they are. Chit and Sayer, there's never a latest of Sophic. Chit always grew, one always knew what wheat was, and one always knew what barley was. So there was never ever a latest of Sophic, the Chit and Sayer, wheat and barley. However, the other three grains are a little bit more controversial. That Rashi and Masechet Pesachim, when the Mishnah appears, that's Matzah. So Rashi gives you the old French word for these three different grains, which is based on the Latin. And if you just connect the dots, you realize right away that Rashi is describing oats, spelt, and rye. That's what we were little kids, they taught us wheat, barley, oats, spelt, and rye. That's based on this Rashi. Rashi gives you the word for oats. And so I don't know what the word is, the Latin word for oats. She says the Flamine. What? Avina, right? What are you looking for? Online, the old Latin word? So, Rashi
It's current lighting.
Rashi writes, Shibola Shul Avina. Rashi writes, Alabez Yudanav. And then for the other words, Shifon, Rashi writes, Sigla, which I think is one of them spelled, one of them is right, I don't know which is which. Okay? Fine. So Rashi gives you the word Avir. I remember, I can't say that I was with the Rav when he's discovered the Bag of Rights, but I can tell you the following story that happened. Years ago, so in the old days, before chickenpox vaccines, one of my kids had a chickenpox as a baby. So there was there's this thing that you soak the kid in like an oatmeal bath or something, so it's supposed to take away some of the itch. So they have these packs of oatmeal that you mix with water and you wash the old kid or something, sure, you soak in it, it's supposed to work. So I remember when my wife sent me to the store to go buy one of these packs of oatmeal thing. So it's made by a company called Avira. His name of the company. So I'm so excited. So I told my wife, I said, now I understand why it's called Avira. This is a French Rashi, it's a Latin Rashi, it's an old French Rashi. Okay, anyway. So those who follow this tradition of Rashi assume that oats and then spelt and Arai also considered to be Chameshas Minigog and Chol Dini Atera. And some raised the question about this. So there was a famous study that was done about 100 years ago or so by a man in Eretz Yisrael by the name of, he was a professor. His name was Professor Felix. And he wrote a whole series of books about Tzomeach, Mizman HaTanach, Mizman HaMishnah, about different agriculture, Maisalach, animals, all kind of stuff in the days of Chazal. And he claimed that oats did not grow in Eretz Yisrael in the days of the Mishnah. That was his theory. Yeah, based on how he knew that, it's a 100-page book, I don't know. So he claims that oats didn't grow. If that's the case, it would be very, very hard to believe that Chazal described something that Pasha didn't exist. If they didn't have oats, So Chazal didn't speak about potatoes, potatoes didn't grow in there. They didn't speak about corn didn't grow in there. It's true. So the Hecha tasted it when he spoke about something that they never saw. So that was his whole theory, that oats never really grew in there. It's true in that part of the world at that time. And therefore, it must be that the Chavon of the Chamish and the Nedon is something different than he said. He said the same thing about the spelt and the rye as well. But those are clearly not the Chamish and the Nedon. So the truth is that he wasn't the first one to make this realization. One of the Rishonim said, one of the Rishonim writes, Feirush, the Rashi is not correct. One of the Rishonim gives a different interpretation of oats. That not considered to be for the Chamish and the Nedon. So the question is, do we accept this theory at all? The Chamish and the Nedon does have any impact whatsoever on the Prochus, any other area of Halacha. So, you can verify the story about Simon. I don't remember whether he told to me himself or whatever his name. Check it up. That apparently he asked Rav Shlomo Zalman this question about how much it would be concerned with this peak book of Professor Felix. So again, the way I heard the story, but it's easily verifiable, that Rav Shlomo Zalman said to him something like, "Ani gam yodeh mashem up Felix, aval tase mashem asal shachasa." The grandfather made mezonos on oats, he could make the mezonos on oats. So you assume that oats are chamesh and nedarim. So Lamai says, I think that the Yerushalayim assumes that way. There were some who were concerned a little bit. There were some who were nervous to make mezonos on Cheerios and mezonos on all the old cereals. But it's pretty much just about almost universally accepted today, like Shittas Rashi, that the oats dispelled from the rye are considered to be chamesh and nedarim. Many people rely on this even for the mitzvah deraisa and matzah. And people have allergies to wheat, and they have to eat special, old matzahs. So they're for sure assuming this way. Most people do make mezonos on oatmeal, do make mezonos on Cheerios. So I think that that's generally been assumed today that these are chamesh b'nei dovin. Fine. So the bottom line is you take one of these chamesh b'nei dovin and you mix it together with water, and you make it into a dough, and then you bake it up, and sure, that's bread. That's the definition of bread. So I very, very quickly gave you two different processes that kind of slipped them under the radar. I said that you mix the flour and the measurement of the oven with water, and you turn it into a dough, and then I said you throw it into the oven and you bake it and show it. So I just very, very quickly referenced the Mishnah of the Shabbos about Lisha Nafir, it's to do with the past. So under normal circumstances, those are the two procedures that are necessary to create halachic bread. There's Lisha and Nafir. However, the question becomes, are they really both necessary? Water is only to be past. Again, we are learning Hilchos Bracha, so we're focusing on the Bracha of Hamoitzi, but it's really part of a Pirsa Mozen Shah, it's really part of our Farshas Chalav Shah, it's really part of Hilchos Matzah Shalav. Are both of those processes really absolutely necessary in order to create the Shem Pas? Or maybe Shem Pas can be created perhaps with maybe one of those suppressors, maybe you don't necessarily need both leisha and afia. So the background to this discussion actually begins in Maseches Challah. It has some very, very serious potential nafkinis in Maseches Challah as well as in Luchos Brachos. So we're really going to start the discussion back in Maseches Challah. The Mishnah Maseches Challah speaks about something which is Tchilos Isa and Sofa Sufkinin. So the word Isa has the connotation of thick, kind of a dough. Sufkinin, like a sugaria, is more like a, is more of a, the acid of really also, he says, but the term sufkinin has more of a connotation of something that's more pourable, something that's more, that's less thick, less of a thick kind of a doughy substance, rather more something almost similar, a little bit close like to like a batter added into a dough per se. So a very, very big mission of Maseches Challah speaks about when you have something that's chilos and isa in a sense of sufkinin. It starts out as an isa, and then it becomes eventually sufkinin. What in the world does that mean? So places in a few places, there's the brach, there's the Sochim, quotes from Rabbeinu Tam, where the following interesting shot in his mission. Rabbeinu Tam says that isa chilos and isa in a sense of sufkinin means that you take your flour from the place in the dough, and you mix it with water, and you make a really, really thick dough. Like a bit hard ball of dough. Something that would easily be used to make bread, to make matzahs, things that you normally associate with being the lechem process. But then, rather than baking that dough, you treated that dough with a different process. What process did you treat it with? You cooked it rather than you baked it. Now, cooking it is something that's usually associated with softer kind, thinner kind of mixtures. So you took the thick doughy mixture, and you went ahead and you treated it with bishul rather than afiyah. So, in effect, if I'm mistaken, you stand on our question. In order to be lechem, in order to be chayim and challah, you have to have both isa and afiyah, both alisha and afiyah, or somehow can you have one without the other. So, then Tom learns pshat in the Mishnah in challah that chilas isa and sufkinin, as long as it started out at alisha, as long as it had a thick dough mixture to it, even though it never ever saw the insides of an oven, it was cooked in a pot. It doesn't really matter. Once it started out as an isa, so it's considered to be chayyavah simchal. That's the famous sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. Isa shetchilas isa sama sufkinin is chayyavah simchal in that time. So Tosfos in Masechet Brachos in Kitzim Avarachim quotes a suffix as to what exactly Rabbeinu Tam meant. We're not sure whether we follow Rabbeinu Tam, but first we have to understand what he said. What did Rabbeinu Tam mean when he said that such an ayinim is chayyavah simchal? So says Tosfos, I'm so long, you don't understand one of two ways. Either you can understand that Rabbeinu Tam has a new definition of lechem. We thought that lechem and afiyah go hand in hand. The pasuk says, "Ofu lach lechem betar lechem." We thought that it's inconceivable to have something called a lachli lechem unless it's baked in an oven. And we're in for a surprise. Rabbeinu Tam says that baked in the oven is not so critical, it's not so important. Something can get a shem lechem on it when simply undergoing the first procedure. The process of lisha is a mechayim, is a kivay of the shem lechem. And that's what chayim and challah. Because if not for the fact that it has a shem lechem, it would never be chayim simchal lechal lechem lechem art. It has to be a lachli lechem and be chayim simchal. So Rabbeinu Tam says that it's chayim and challah, that's the about the thing that has a shem lechem art. Is that what Rabbeinu Tam meant? Or no, maybe Rabbeinu Tam meant lechem it's not. But who says it has to be lechem and be chayim simchal? When it comes to challah, the Torah says two different things. The Torah says, Vayom ha'cholchim lechem art, three with Jumal Hashem, v'yishisa v'yisaysechem. The Torah speaks about both lechem and isa. So one could have understood that it has to be both. You have to have Isa and Lechem means Afiya. You have to have both. Or maybe not. Maybe what the Torah is saying is that there are almost two different routes to arrive at a Chayyav Chala. You can become Chayyav Zim Chala either if it's Lechem or if it's Isa. Isa is an independent Chayyav Chala, even though it doesn't have a Shem Lechem on it. So is that what Rabbeinu Tam meant? Unclear. So all we know Rabbeinu Tam said is Pshat in the Mishnah Chala. Rabbeinu Tam wasn't talking about the Brach, Rabbeinu Tam was talking about the Chala. He said that if you have chilas isa v'sefer sufkin, namely a blila of a thick dough that was subsequently cooked, it's chayav simchala. Did Rabbeinu Tam mean to redefine that afiyah as a function of lisha alone, or did Rabbeinu Tam mean to say it's not called lechem and it's still chayav simchala because it's called isa? My nafkamina, it's semantics. My nafkamina says types of the usual nafkamina. Nafkamina, what are the brachas? What brach would you say on this kind of food? Would you recite hamaitzi? Would you recite mezayis? So then you say the first chapter of Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam is redefining lechem. Lechem is now a function of isa alone, of lima ava. Lechem is a function of lisha alone. So then Rabbeinu Tam is saying it's called lechem for challah purposes, and it's called lechem for hamitzi and for chesed bazim purposes. But if order made a tamenta says that it's a quirk in Ochas Chal, Chinish Ochas Chal, that's Chayyavas and Chal, even though it's not Lechem because it's a Nisa, so that would have zero impact in terms of Ochas Brachas. So that's a huge question. That's a big, big question. That's going to be a chav enough people. Anyone know what kind of food I'm talking about? We have a lot of foods like that. We have loads of those kinds of foods. We love others that never ended up in Tzaren Oven. Everyone knows some of those. You mean a blue lava never ended up in Tzaren Oven?
Bagel.
A bagel did end up in Tzaren Oven. Eventually, it ends up in oven. Pasta. Pasta is a good one, but pasta is going to fall short for another reason, but you're right. What else?
Donut?
What?
Donut?
Kreploch.
Wonton.
Donuts. Most of these things. All over the place. You have these thick doughs that never see it inside an oven. Either they end up inside a pot of boiling water, or very often they end up inside a pot of boiling oil, which is like boiling water. They never saw the inside of an oven. Are those lechemana? So Rabbi Tam says, for sure you have to mafresh chal on them, but we're not so sure whether you have to make a bracha b'abayit in them or not. So we have a lot of work to do to fine-tune this Rabbi Tam. We have to understand what Rabbi Tam did or did not say, and then we have to figure out, well, do we follow this Rabbi Tam? To see if you accept the halacha, the Beit Hamikdash pshat in the Mishnah Chala, even the one that's accepted the halacha. So this is going to set the stage for a lot of discussions on brachas of some of the strange kinds of foods, the wontons and the kreploch and the donuts and all these kinds of stuff. We'll talk about bagels a little bit later. Also, bagels is a little bit of a different quirk because you're correct that it's a thick dough that's put in the boiling water, but then it's subsequently baked, unlike the other foods that we mentioned. So we have a lot of things to talk about during setting the stage. So as we're going to see in this sugya, is that a lot of the discussions about the brachas are not going to start with brachas. They're going to end it with brachas. They're going to start with challah. Once we get the rules of challah down bad, then hopefully that you'll be able to apply the brachas. Definitely not.